Welcome to Agenda 31, Episode 39, recorded live July 10th, 2015. This is Todd McGreevy and Corey Ibe with our good friend Jeff Ford listening live at Agenda31.org.
We're not policing the world. We're not policing the world. We're not policing the world.
No, we don't have a military-industrial complex. No, we don't have a military-industrial complex.
Because you can't have prosperity if you're constantly under the risk of a terrorist attack.
Corey, requesting the authority, that doesn't seem something that you and I are very good at.
No, I'm much better at begging for forgiveness.
Exactly. Greetings, Corey, and welcome to the show.
Waving a hand to you, Todd.
Good to hear your voice, my friend. This is Todd McGreevy, broadcasting live from the banks of the Mississippi River in Scott County, Iowa. I'm being joined by my co-host,
Corey Ibe, broadcasting from within the city limits of Los Angeles, and specifically not from the city of Los Angeles. Figure that one out.
Our good friend Corey, he's one of the people of the several states of California, 1849. He's domiciled there, and he lives freer than most of us. And Corey, we are one of our biggest audiences is on the No Agenda stream, noagendastream.com. Let's be frank here. You know, nobody's really tuning in to our weekly live cast. Nobody's is not a fair word. A handful of people are tuning in, but not hundreds.
A few of the hardcore ones, that's for sure.
The most astute, aware people truly on the planet are tuning in to our live broadcast, that's for sure. Of course, they're alerted via our vast social media network enterprise that we have. I mean, I tweet, you Facebook, and my God, doesn't everybody understand what we're doing here?
You know, I ask the same question sometimes. What are we doing here?
What are we doing here? And I'll tell you what, Void Zero is one of the producers of the No Agenda stream, and he's the one that gets our pre-recorded broadcast/podcast into the queue to be played on Sundays after the Adam Curry and John C. Dvorak show, No Agenda. And we're very thankful for that. Have been for some time. He posted to me in the chat room there, hey, just one idea I had. If you start the show, meaning our show, Agenda 31, with an opener that stays the same, and then do an intro, and then play random music, it will be more consistent and easier for people to keep listening. Right now, if listeners don't like the first song, bam, you lose them. Intro is the most important part of the show opening. So my suggestion is to make it consistent. And don't wait before doing a Welcome to Agenda 31. Maybe even get a different voice to record it. Just my two cents. Void. So I replied, love it. You know, I mean, this is good. This is good constructive criticism. This is where our production values have been lacking on this show. And if we're trying to compete and we're, you know, but are we, Corey? Are we really trying to compete? That's where I want this to go. This is what I'm trying to understand.
I like to think we make it up with quality information and action that you just won't find anywhere else in the podcast universe.
And that is an excellent thesis. And I encourage I'm just going to give chops where chops are due. No Agenda, Curry and Dvorak are mentors / inspirations to me.
Of course.
And I follow what they do and I listen to what they say. And I give them feedback, and they occasionally have listened to me, I think. Who knows? But, you know, they're listening to a lot of people. And they're also sharing with a lot of people what they're up to and how they're thinking about what they're doing. And Dvorak, you know, he tried to sum up their thesis the other day, Corey. And it's because they cover such a broad spectrum of things that it's hard to understand. And Dvorak summed it up in that, I'm going to paraphrase this, we try and give information that when people listen to us, they feel like they have a leg up on people who don't listen to us.
Nice.
And to me, that seemed like, you know, like Dvorak's law or Dvorak's rule. Like, you know, if you were to boil it down, you know, that's a pretty good metric. Hey,
that really is.
If you listen to this, what you and I are talking about, Corey, you got a leg up on somebody who hasn't listened to this.
Yes.
I like it.
I like it a lot.
So we're gonna totally steal Dvorak's thesis for the No Agenda show, and that's, you know, I've been saying what's your strategy to make a difference, Corey? That's been my mantra, you know, our mantra for the last 38 shows. And the other I'll add to the mantra is, you know, hopefully you'll hear something here that gives you a leg up on those that haven't listened to what you've heard here. So to that end, Corey. You know, you were researching some stuff in Irvine we talked about in the last episode, and this former chief of police prior to Maggard, Berkow, Berkow. You have yet another instance where the chief of police office was usurped, is what we've alleged, right?
Yes, it's right in writing. It's right in the records of the city council minutes. There was no vote that Berkow was ever appointed chief of police. And he never filed his oath at the county recorder's office, which we've covered many times. He absolutely has to. We did learn from the restraining order that was filed that a chief of police doesn't have a time limit on when he has to file it. So if he filed it his very last day in office, then he technically would be, you know, within the law, not obviously not in the spirit of the law.
And that stands for Berkow as well.
Yeah, it stands for Berkow, but he's not chief of police anymore. Right. He never was.
He's moved
on. Police, but he's no longer there, so he can't file his oath to fix it and say, oh, well, you know, here we go. So there's a record from the Orange County Recorder's Office that says he was never the chief of police. The minutes from the city council meeting are the city manager, who does not have authority to appoint a chief of police, just walks out into the room there. You know, the way it's worded is Allison Hart just simply introduces him as the chief of police.
It's Kabuki theater. It's Kabuki. It's
Kabuki theater, but it's criminal activity. And I had somebody 2 days ago that I was kind of discussing this a little bit with, and they were really not sure that it's a good idea to point this out, which, you know, all I could do was slap my head. That was all I could do with that. But
I mean, don't go there, Corey. This might be too hard for everybody to understand. Too much reality.
I don't know. And it was amazing to me because the question was, well, was he a good chief of police? And the thing is, he was never the chief of police. He might have done good things.
That's a brilliant question. That's the question that needs to be answered right there.
Of course, yeah. If I'm sure he did good things. You know, if I were chief of police, I would do good things. But one thing I would not do is commit the criminal activity it took for Berkow to become chief of police. I would never do that. If I were ever a chief of police, I would be appointed properly, which, by the way, is never going to happen, but I would do good things. Well, just because Burkow, let's say he, and it's questionable, you know, he does have, which we'll get into, a little bit of a history on his resume or his you know, sheet about himself. He claims to have done a lot of really good things, and let's just say he did all of those really good things. He impersonated a peace officer to do it. It's criminal
activity. Well, Corey, I think we can cut to the quick here, and we've discussed in the last episode his vitae and his trajectory from Irvine down to Georgia, correct?
Yeah, Irvine to LAPD.
To LAPD.
Yeah.
In LAPD. Internal affairs.
Anybody ever watch the show
The Closer? I mean, you know, this is LA. You know, this, how much more drama can you look for? Los Angeles Internal Affairs. Then from there down to Georgia, correct?
Then, yeah, I think he had a little stint as a contractor in Boston in between L.A. and Georgia. I'm not sure exactly when that time period was because he owned a couple of companies and a few other things. But, yeah, then he went to Georgia and was there for a couple of years. Kind of his M.O. is he's in any place for just a couple of years.
And currently, his current position is chief of investigator for the Coast Guard.
Yes.
Yeah. So we've covered this in the previous show, and we were going to play a clip here of him in Savannah. But the reason that it's important to even deal with Burkow is that Corey's hold please. What I want to do, Corey, is I want to back up a second and look at the macro picture of how we're trying to deal with this effort at Agenda 31.
Yes.
And the dialogue that you and producer Tim have been having via email, and you guys just refuse to use Basecamp, much to my chagrin, where this brilliant back and forth is going on. It's a, you know, like, just feed Google all your guys' freaking brains, you know, just give it right to them. just load it right up to the NSA. You know, who cares? Just give them everything you're thinking, because you're two of the most brilliant people I know with regards to dealing with this subject matter that we deal with on this show, and that is investigating what has gone before us and trying to pursue what's before us with regards to living free. And what I'm coming down to is that one of the macros I'm taking away from your guys' heated dialogue is, you know what? We Agenda 31 wants to talk about 3,100 counties that's in America, and that's where it's kind of the riff on Agenda 21, but it's 3,100 counties. You know, and it's a little bit overreaching to think there's going to be 3,100 people trying to pay attention like we do, Corey. It's just not happening right now. It's not happening.
Not yet.
However, you've pointed out in this dialogue with Tim that I think is a big macro to look at, and that is, you know what? There's going to be 50 different ways to skin this cat.
Yes.
I've got California as best as I can do. This is what I'm doing. All we can do is the best we can do. That's it. And Californians, you need to step up and deal with Corey and deal with what he is doing in California. And what better crucible to work with the concepts you're working with, Corey, than one of the highest GPDs in the world than California.
Yeah, good place for my training wheels.
Thank you. Yeah, if you can cut the rug in California like Corey is cutting the rug with regards to living free as one of the people in the several states and enforcing the guarantee that the Constitution has as a Republican form of government, then you're doing pretty good. And you should step up in California. Where I'm going with this, Corey, is the show, Agenda 31. We need to carve out some milestones that are achievable.
Yes.
Okay? And they include, like, well, when somebody's gotten to the level that Corey has in a respective state, then this is what goes on. And we should just focus on California for now. Screw everybody else. I'm not shitting you. And I was ready to cast aside California, you know, like, because they're just, you know, you got Hollywood and the nonsense and the but you know what? It is one of the most fascinating crucibles going on.
Yeah, California is crazy.
It is.
I mean, it's out of control.
But this out of control as it is, but it also has a much more of an independent foundation of coming into being. It's not Nevada. Yeah. It wasn't created as an administrative state like Nevada. You know,
right?
And it's still referenced in the codified administrative constitution that all the sheeple feel themselves governed by.
Yes. Hey, California is a unique place, just like every other. And in that conversation with Tim, we pointed out that some of the things that I do here, if you were to just say, oh, well, hey, let's do the exact same thing in another state like Maryland. You know, one of the things I point out quite often is that the Constitution of 1879 in California references the 1849 Constitution for its borders. And you know, we've talked over and over that Texas v. White discusses this. And that's a tool that I use for here in California. But Tim pointed out that the Constitution in Maryland is different. So if somebody were to try and take the same argument that I have here in California, it might not work in Maryland. The idea is the same, that we've been screwed over by the federal government and that you got to figure out what your real state is, that the federal government is playing a game and they're doing it very well. But the way people got screwed over is different. Texas, that state came to be under federal control through the Civil War.
31 different ways you've been screwed over.
There you go. Yes. And so, I, as a disclosure, if you're in Maryland and you're going to try and copy exactly what we're doing here in California because you're just looking for a template, you're going to end up in trouble. It's not going to work. You got to learn how your state works, why your state is in the condition it is today, and learn the nuances of your state, which is what the people are supposed to do. The people are supposed to know how their government works.
And Corey, you have learned the nuances of your state, you know, as much as anybody I know. And it goes to the franchise board you've dealt with, the franchise tax board.
Yeah.
You've carried elements of a great import to the highest level of government in California, administrative government, and been shown the door many, many times.
Well, I wear as a badge that the California Board of Equalization sent out a memo that none of their employees are allowed to talk to me anymore statewide. I think that's pretty cool.
That's really cool, actually.
You know, I'm at least I'm on that list.
Yeah, that's a good list to be on. So, California. I want to make a focus, and you and I have talked. You know, we can get in the weeds on some details, like okay, you've got exempt plates, but no insurance. How does that work? And then you and I talked about, well, we need to have more people, you know, band together and create insurance. And the folks at Mises.org have all kinds of recordings and writings of Murray Rothbard about insurance. It's really fascinating that they've really, you know, identified that it is a mutual association is what it is.
Yes. Mutual, how do you spell Mises? I just went to
M-I-S-E-S.
M-I-S-E-S?
Yeah,
okay.
Mises. Yeah, M-I-S-E-S. Spelled it wrong. .org. And look up Murray Rothbard in insurance.
Okay.
And he did a book that's about the Federal Reserve that has a whole chapter on insurance that I found fascinating. And you touched on it without even knowing I had read it or heard his stuff the other day when we were talking. And you need an independent insurance agency, you know, devoid of, it's just a mutual association. It's the most ultimate behavior of independence.
Yes.
50 of us decide where we live to put this much money in to protect each other on certain circumstances and contingencies.
Yeah.
And we agree upon it amongst ourselves without third party government interference and or a permission. I mean, it's the holy grail of,
that's exactly it.
You know, of you want the safety net? No, we have our own safety net over here that we've actualized and done actuaries on, but are devoid of your interference as privileged winners and losers, because that's the insurance racket that we live with.
Yes, it is.
It's like, you know, doing transactions without, you know, paying a VIG. They don't like that shit.
Yeah, you're right. They don't. Yeah, it'd be really simple if they're, because now, you know, my contest with the DMV has led to the DMV basically stating that it's not their car. So I'm claiming it as mine, and I gave the DMV back all of their property, the plates, the registration, the pink slip, everything. And now I just have a car. There's no stickers on it. There's no, you know, I saw something on Facebook the other day where a guy got pulled over and he's got private written all over his car and fake license plates and everything else. And I don't feel the need to do all that. I think that, you know, the cops, if they decide that they want to pull me over, which so far hasn't happened, I've been in a very, very densely populated area and the plates came off on July 1st. But if they do pull me over, I anticipate the conversation going fairly smoothly. I mean, I think California government, for the most part, gets the reason why there's no plates on my car. I'm not trying to break the law. It's not my intention to violate the law at all. It's my intention to follow the law. It's just my intention to follow the law that was designed for the people, not the law designed for government employees.
That should be repeated over and over, Corey. That is the thesis right there.
Yeah.
We have lost sight of the simple fact that the laws are supposed to be written to govern the government, not the people. Keep the government in its box with regards to its ability to adjudicate our differences. That's how I summarize the requirement of government.
I think that's a good summary.
Let's listen to Mr. Burkow. He's down in, I mean, Corey, this is just
Hang
so
on,
you
my
know.
My popcorn's not ready yet.
Let I'm me telling you some. What, man, this is the
this
no
is
agenda
good stuff.
For the no agenda listeners, the, you know, the Curries of the world. I mean, I'm telling you, you're going to want to follow this. This is,
now,
this is some juicy stuff.
I think maybe before playing this clip, it might be good to set up, unless you want to do it later, that, did you read the article or that part where while he was actually submitting his resignation in Georgia, what happened?
He was given a citation, right? A parking
ticket.
Yeah,
he was given a parking ticket while he was turning in his resignation.
He uses a verb at the very beginning of this clip that is critical to just understanding his circumstances. Let's see how this sounds real quick here.
Hijacking this press conference with a different message this morning. Earlier this morning, I met...
He said he's hijacking this press conference with a different message this morning. It's hard to hear that, but I've heard it. He said he's hijacking. He literally said that out loud. I'm hijacking this news conference with a different message this morning. Okay.
You know, I heard that, and I don't know why he used that term. But it is interesting. It's a bit of a tell. What do you think?
He's full of tells here. He's in a very stressful situation with a focused effort on him in Savannah, Georgia, where he's had some kind of tryst with a employee there, which I don't care about. But as Corey pointed out in the last show, you know, if you're going to have a personal relationship with one of your subordinates in a law enforcement agency, that should be disclosed, and it wasn't. And
I think what happened was he had that relationship at LAPD with one of his subordinate officers, and that subordinate officer sued him shortly after he went to work at
Savannah.
And I don't think they were happy about kind of getting hit upside the head with all of this.
All right, let's hear the rest of this.
With the Police Policy Committee, that is a group that consists of the mayor, the chairman of the county commission, county manager, and the city manager, press conference for a different message this morning. Earlier this morning, I met with the Police Policy Committee. That is a group that consists of the mayor, the chairman of the county commission, the county manager, and the city manager, and they serve as the governing body for the Metropolitan Police Department. This group is balanced between the city and the county, and it's comprised of those people whom I seek guidance from or permission to operate and manage the police department. And today, this morning, it was these leaders to whom I have submitted my resignation as chief of the Metropolitan Police Department. It's been more than...
He almost makes it sound like a brave thing he did. It's to these people he submitted his resignation, Corey.
He's good. Look at his resume.
He's really good. Here we go.
3 years since I was asked to come to Savannah from Los Angeles. At the time, I wasn't looking for a job. I had a pretty good one as a deputy chief.
Pretty good.
But I was asked to come here and to speak with the community and the elected officials and to consider taking on the challenges. I did. And frankly, I fell in love. I fell in love with a community that is both physically beautiful and wonderfully diverse. An area that was vibrant and challenging, with real social concerns and crime issues, but the community wanted to take them on.
If he could have a teleprompter, he would. He's referring to his notes in this video, by the way.
It's no wonder that he would say his job in L.A. was doing pretty good. It was getting him laid.
He was committed to making this a better place to live, work, and visit. And I got that from everybody when I came here.
I got it from everybody.
2006. I got it from appointed officials. I got it from elected officials. I got it from community members. And most importantly, I got it from all the members of the police department, sworn and civilian. Everybody wanted change, and everybody wanted to make things better. And so we embarked on this fascinating journey.
Everybody wanted change, and everybody wanted to make things better, Corey.
Yeah.
It's a unique circumstance there in Savannah. Everybody wanted to make things better and have change to make things
and
better.
And he wasn't looking for a job.
Yeah, that's right. They called him.
When we started, the community was just beginning to recover from a sense that public safety had melted down, that it was not safe to walk the streets or enjoy our city, that our community and our way of life were under siege. And inside the police department, it felt that way to a certain extent as well. The department was at least two agencies, maybe more. Folks were unhappy. There were pay issues. There were recognition issues. There were staffing issues. And there were promotional issues. As a new chief, you come in, you turn over every rock, you look in every closet. And for me, every closet was a new challenge, a new crisis, and in my view, a new opportunity.
Every closet's an opportunity, Corey.
Yes.
I mean, really? Really? Where did that come from?
There's a lot of opportunities.
As his finale there. I mean, really?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. We will leave that to the ether, and we will link this at agenda31.org, and people can avail themselves of that clip all they want. Corey. This makes us look like we're just trying to nitpick at these public officials, right? You know, I mean, we could play the Maggard video of him looking like TJ Hooker with this big production coming to a freaking, you know, award ceremony, and where he emerges backstage, you know, at the end of the film that was pre-recorded. It's all on YouTube. Just YouTube Chief Maggard, you know, and you'll get it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's there. It's this guy we just heard, you know, say he's you know, given his resignation, and he was coming in under, you know, just everybody just wanted to see change and positive movement. This guy is the head investigator at the Coast Guard and Homeland Security. Yeah. And he never was appointed chief of police to begin with in his early in his career. And his vitae, his little LinkedIn, you know, history of employment is false.
Exactly. And it's a felony to file a false document, which he filed an oath at the city recorder's office or the city clerk's office in Irvine that says chief of police on it. And he's not. You check for yourself. Call Irvine and ask him for the vote record of when Burkow was appointed. Every other chief of police before Burkow was appointed by the city council.
asked for the vote record of the city council in Irvine.
Yeah.
I mean, ask for it.
They'll tell you it's not there. There is no vote record that he was ever appointed by the city council, which now what that's done is that's created a situation where a bunch of other agencies are participating in impersonating a peace officer. For you to call yourself a chief of police, and you're not, you're impersonating a peace officer. So the Coast Guard has right on their website that he's a former Irvine chief of police. The Coast Guard's wrong. So I contacted him about that, and I'm sure looking forward to the response.
This is what you can do in your state. This is what you can do in your county where you live. I mean, we need people like Corey in Kentucky. We need people like Corey in Indiana. We need people like Corey in Louisiana. Everybody needs to figure out their state history and their state constitution and take the low-risk, high-reward efforts that we're talking about that include a common law ID. How do you identify yourself? You just start with that basic premise. If you can understand a common law ID and what it means and how it functions, then you might be able to help explore hold people accountable like Corey is in California.
That's a huge part of the battle. If you can understand the importance of a common law ID. So often people put it together and they're asking for something. They kind of look at this piece of paper and think maybe it's magical. No, it's a tool. And if you can understand how that tool works, once you grasp that, it is incredibly powerful.
It is a turning point. You're right. And Corey, we have said this, back when I was on Republic Broadcasting Network and you and I did Common Sense Revisited, that we should probably make a passage of entry requirement that you have a common law ID, requirement for to engage in anything. I think one of the main reasons you even deal with my brother Tim is because he does have a common law ID. He tried. He's stepped up to the DMV. He's asked for, a copy of the application and told, no, we can't give you that. He's tried.
Right.
Very few people
he's incredibly
even
incredibly intelligent.
And well,
it's not like it's a heated debate with somebody with no brain power.
Yeah, but even I'm in all seriousness. I mean, it, even more importantly, he has gone to the mat. He has gone to the DMV with, the premise of I am not the birth record, and gotten on phone conversation with the corporate counsel for the DMV, screaming at him that, I know what you're trying to do. You're not going to get away with it. I mean, the insiders are read in on this, Corey.
Oh, yeah.
They're read in. They know what we're talking about.
They know, and I think they're nervous that, people are starting, they're so tired of how ridiculous government is that the idea that you could just make your own ID and not participate in their game is becoming more and more reasonable to people.
Yeah, that's what it's. If you can participate in fantasy football, why wouldn't you participate in becoming one of the people of the several states?
That's it.
And that it's going to come across as disingenuous or they're talking about fantasy football. Well, I'm sorry. The Emergency Management Agency in Scott County, Iowa, where I live, has been operating for 14 years without filing their articles of incorporation or their bylaws.
Yeah.
And bonding the people in debt.
Fantasy emergency preparedness centers.
What's that?
Fantasy emergency centers.
Exactly. Fantasy emergency centers. They can't even follow their own statutes. So the rules for us, rules for them. It's time to, draw that line in the sand.
And the thing with the common law ID is it brings to bear a very powerful tool, which is the Constitution. And if you've taken care of your paperwork and you no longer have any obligation to identify yourself as a state-issued birth record, and there are contractual obligations that people sign all the time and don't realize what they're doing, one of them is a driver's license. But once you've cleared those up and you no longer have the birth record that's on file at the the state office here in California is where they have them at the Department of Public Health. If there's no connection between you and that birth record, which is a state issued document, and it's in a different jurisdiction than the jurisdiction intended for the people, and they continue to try and put that identification on you, I say, and I think it's a very sound argument, that what the government is doing is creating a title of nobility. And that they're absolutely prohibited from doing that. It's not even an amendment. It's in the core part of the Constitution that the United States shall not issue titles of nobility.
Corey, we're terrible marketers. We are terrible marketers. Because the titles
of
nobility.
We've been kind of busy doing this, Todd.
I know. I get that. But this is
not like we have a system to sell or anything. There's no money in it.
No, we got no seeds. We got no, sponsors. We've got nothing.
Do have a hell of a portfolio of packages dealing with government. That's for sure.
Yeah, we do. We do have that. And this is a self-flogging, situation here where we go on the air, trying to get people to say, yes, I should step up. I should start spending time like Corey and Todd do and thinking about these things. And, oh, my God, this is going to hurt my brain.
It does at first, but it's like going to the gym. When you first start working out, it hurts. When you first start trying to comprehend that you're not going to be that person on the birth record, it you might get a headache. You've been ingrained.
It will hurt. It will hurt at first.
Yes, it does. But the state has just ingrained the existence that we have today, which is completely different than what the framers intended for the government to operate. They never intended for the people to be directly subject to the president for executive orders. The whole point of having the two different levels of government and having the federal government in its box in Washington, D.C., was symbolic in one way. It's more than symbolic, but symbolic in one way that, hey, the federal government doesn't mess around with the people. It's got a specific job, and that job is to, it's outlined in the Constitution, provide for a common defense, make commerce regular, and so forth. But through the course of events of a tumultuous history of the United States, there is now a class of citizens that exists under the direct control of the president. And for the average American, they're only aware of that one class of citizen. They're not aware of an upper class of citizen known as a state citizen. And though that class of people, the president can write whatever executive orders he wants that doesn't apply to those people.
What's the term, homogram?
Homograph.
Homograph. Homograph. The people that they consider themselves people with the small p are also people that are the subjects of the president because they are considered federal personnel. People is a homograph.
Yeah. You know, I guess it would work like this, Todd. What if, I moved in next door to you and I build a home that looks exactly like yours, I get a dog that looks like yours, and I hire a model to look like your wife, and I start tricking you into thinking that you're in the wrong home. This is your home over here. And I get you to come in my home based on the false premise that you think it's your home. Well, you're still in my home. I can tell you to get out. Right?
I can definitely have a lot more control in my home than I do in yours.
Exactly. And that's just what the federal government has done. The federal government has tremendous control in their home and in their jurisdiction. And, that's just the way the Constitution set it up.
Let's drill down on that for a second. And I am remiss because I have not taken the time to pore over the freaking exhaustive thread between you and Tim. Okay, I've kept up to speed like at about a 20% capacity. All right, of just monitoring, beginning and middle and end of stuff, and how can there be a question that there is an administrative overlay? I don't get that. It says codified. at the Iowa website for the government, it says codified, you know, 1879, whatever it is. I mean, codified. It's turned into administrative law right there. They're saying they, being the entity that purports to be government, saying we are subsuming ourselves to the federal government. We're becoming an administrative division of them. We may refer to the state of the people in our documents here, but we're not going to overtly state this. And it's up to us to figure out how the people still exist when that administrative overlay was placed upon each state.
Yeah, and that administrative overlay, it's not something that happened surreptitiously or anything. It happens when the state enters the union. When California was a state completely on its own, when it adopted the Constitution in 1849, it was literally a nation all on its own. Now, it doesn't matter if any other countries recognize California or not, because the United States did. And California, very shortly after being a nation all by itself for a while, entered the Union. And the moment Congress approved it and all the paperwork was done, California went from having just a California government to having two governments that operate within California. One of them is the state government, which the state government would no longer handle the, you know, have its own military to handle a defense. It would no longer be entering into treaties, not that it ever did, but it certainly had the power at the time when it was a nation by itself. But once it enters the
Union, it approved 18 rights for the federal government to act on its behalf.
Yes. Yeah. And the United States, the federal government, legitimately operates within the borders of California with its own jurisdiction. Now, at the time in 1850, when California entered the Union, there were no citizens of the United States. There were no U.S. citizens, federal government citizens. That just didn't exist. So it was very easy to determine if you're dealing with a federal agency, that if you're one of the people, you have no business dealing with them. There's no reason why you should ever be dealing with...
Their interface is with the state government.
Exactly. Their interface is with the state government, and the people interface with the state government. But after the 14th Amendment, now the federal government could have citizens of its own. And those citizens would live in the different states. And would be residents of whatever state that they were in.
Whoa, back up. And those residents could live in different states, meaning states as an administrative division or states as one of the several states of the Union?
Well, at first, it's both. The 14th Amendment didn't, at least I'm not aware of the 14th Amendment having any specifics in it that created a state. The federal government created a state on its own. Now, they did a great PR campaign in California, and in Texas, it was simply military. They came in and militarily overcame a government that was rebellious in the terms of the Supreme Court. But in California, it was psychological, the takeover. And it was done. You can read all the newspapers. I've looked through newspaper articles from the late 1870s. And they used race baiting. You know, at the time, it was the Chinese was, they were the boogeyman back then. And that they needed this new constitution to deal with the Chinese problem is what they referred to it as. It's no different than today. And what they did was they got people stirred up over something, and everybody approved this constitution of 1879, or at least the record says that they did. But literally what you had happening back then was the people who are not supposed to be messing around with the federal government, now they're creating a constitution for it when they are thinking that they're just replacing their own constitution. And they weren't. They were just creating a new constitution that the government has used effectively to have everyone believe that there is still just one state of
California. Now, this is a critical analysis, Corey, that's new to this show, what you just said.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
Well, the idea is not new. Maybe I'm describing it a little better.
Yeah, that is new. And I like it. I like where you're going with it. I do. But let's recap this, that the 1879 Constitution was not a update to an old to a 30-year-old constitution. It was a new constitution.
It was a new constitution and put into a jurisdiction that was foreign to the state of California. It was put in federal jurisdiction.
From its outset, it was outside the actual people of California.
Yeah, from the very beginning. It was back then, and it always was. And I call it a PR campaign because it would be like IBM. You know, IBM has its own constitution. And that constitution, let's just say IBM was kind of having a little bit of a PR problem with the public in general in the way that they were behaving or something like that. So they put on this big PR campaign that says, hey, you guys get to decide how we're going to run the company. Now, do you really believe IBM is going to let that happen? That they're really going to turn over their company to just the public in general? No, of course not. No. But if they can get everyone to believe that what they had done was to create a constitution that would guide the way IBM ran, and IBM, from all appearances, would follow that constitution, well, then they would be very successful in their PR campaign. But the reality is, IBM gets to decide whatever it wants to do. Even if it has a constitution, it's under no obligation to follow it. And California, I think, has shown over and over with the way that they go about doing business that in the last 8 years or so, maybe 10 years, California has pretty much just said, we don't really care what the Constitution says, referring to their own 1879 Constitution. In fact, it's so ridiculous in that Constitution that lawmakers have put in the 1879 Constitution that a law enforcement agency cannot enforce a law based on its belief that it's unconstitutional. Which means somebody who signs an oath that says they'll support and defend the Constitution, that the Constitution for California abrogates that and says, no, you have to enforce whatever laws us hacks in Sacramento put together. You have to enforce those. You're not allowed to decide.
Until such a matter reaches the appeals court.
The appeals court, yeah. If a lower court decides that it's wrong, it doesn't matter. They still have to keep doing it.
In other words, somebody has to have enough juice and enough chutzpah and enough resources to bring it to an appeals court.
Exactly.
For your crisis of conscience to actually mean anything.
Yeah, and you can guarantee that I would guarantee anybody who works in California government, if you had that crisis of consciousness and you wanted to keep your job, you better not bring that up.
Yeah. This Burkow thing is still tripping me out, Corey. I mean, what a piece of tertiary collateral to what you've been up to. I mean, seriously.
I mean, it's pretty amazing that you flick a sunflower seed out a window, and all of a sudden now you're dealing with the director of intelligence services at the Coast Guard.
Yeah.
It's an amazing journey.
This is what we're talking about, everybody. And, you know, okay, agenda31.org. This is episode 39. It's July 10th, 2015. This is your co-host, Todd McGreevy and Corey Ibe. And we appreciate you tuning in. We want you to know that, you know, listen to the No Agenda Show. No Agenda Show is live on the internet Thursdays and Sundays, 11 a.m. Central, 9 a.m. Pacific, and they'll hit you in the mouth. They'll hit you in the mouth with an incredible media deconstruction, and they're kind enough to play our little, you know, spinely podcast.
It is an honor to be on that network
after their show. And there's some people on that network that if there's anybody who's going to pay attention to some of the stuff we're talking about, is going to be on that network. So back to my other premise, Corey. At 31, I'm sorry, I wish I could pay attention to 3,100 counties, Corey. It's kind of difficult. I can barely pay attention to one. Bailey.
Yeah, and you're doing a great job out there.
Well, great job. Yeah, I'm doing a job. I'm doing a job that nobody else is doing. But screw this. You know, 31. I mean, let's deal with one. California. All right, so I heard on some guy on C-SPAN just recently bring up the bear and the flag, the California Republic flag.
Oh, yeah.
And claim. Now, I've not researched it. I haven't Googled it. I haven't Wikipedia'd it yet. But I did type it in for me to research for this show. That he claimed, this is a representative, some I think it was an Arkansas Republican, some guy. He claims that the bear is actually a symbol of secession from the Union, a la Los Angeles and San Bernardino.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. What's up with the bear?
He doesn't know California history.
I mean, that's pretty specific, you know? I mean, like, yeah. I was like, really? Wow, that's interesting.
I guess before I, you know, say anything, I should learn what his position is. Maybe I'd learn something new.
Yeah, I should look this guy up. He's he was trying to be, you know, pigeonholed into the Confederate flag discussion. That's why he brought this up.
Oh, okay.
Which I think was important.
Well, it is.
All right. So, you know, our mechanism for engagement with the audience and donations really sucks. We don't have the apparatus to speak of. But if you go to agenda31.org, if you listen to this podcast and you think, geez, Corey and Todd have been really, you know, hitting some really chords that I really like, and maybe I should support this because if they had more funding, then they might actually do even more successful stuff. Then go to agenda31.org and donate. There's a donate button there, and there's a P.O. box if you want to snail mail a check as well. A little bit goes a very, very long way.
It does. You imagine if we had a little bit of a budget for some of the things that we're doing?
Dude. We're not all right. Now let's go to a guy who did plan a budget. Let's celebrate a guy who put a plan in action and codified it in a ask, Ed Brotherton.
Great job on that. Yes.
Yes. All right. Let's talk about this.
Inflation Nation.
Yes, inflationnationthemovie.com, I believe.
It's just Inflation Nation Movie.
Inflationnationmovie.com. All right.
Yeah.
Everybody, go to inflationnationmovie.com right now. That's what we're trying to tell you. There it is.
He's laid out tremendous information. Ed Brotherton, as far as the right guy at the right time to put on this movie about what a dollar is and what you have in your pocket, that thing that says a dollar on it is not a dollar according to the Constitution, and how important it is to get this information just spread far and wide. Ed's definitely the right guy to do it. He's laid out the different phases of development. You know, putting on a professional movie is not cheap. But he's got several phases. The first phase is really simple, and it's getting it off the ground to where, and everything is listed out very clear, very succinct. It's very attainable. He works in the industry, so he's definitely the right guy to put this movie together.
Yeah, his phases are development, pre-production, production, post-production, distribution, publicity, and advertising. It's funny, you know, distribution and publishing and advertising is $3 million. It is, you know, clearly, you know, more than 75% of the ask. And if he can get the funding for the first two phases of 150 and 350, you know, 500 grand, phase one and two, development and pre-production, you've got a work product. You've got something really good in a petri dish to work with.
Yeah, if he can get to phase two, he will hit phase four.
And has he gotten? Did he secure like the engagement of Edwin Vieira on this? I hear
he has. He's part of the thing he wants to do with the show is actually get Edwin Vieira, you know, in the movie. Of course, the book Pieces of Eight is very dear to Ed. It's a probably the complete book on constitutional money in the United States. Very rare and very expensive. I think Tim got a copy of it, right?
Yes, he did.
Yeah, great book. Edwin Vieira is a very prolific writer, very intelligent, and probably the go-to source for the money conspiracy that's going on today.
Going on today, I think it could be more effectively worded as been going on for a long time.
Yes, it's been going on, but today it's reached a level that has never happened in our history. Other than, you know, right at the time of the revolution, there was a couple of times when some of the notes that the government was printing became inflated. You know, in fact, George Washington said at one point that it takes a wagon load of notes in order to buy a wagon load of supplies. But that's what we're looking for. That's what's happening. The framers put together a monetary system for the country that would allow plenty of freedom for people to do great things with money, but it would prevent the government from doing what it's doing today. And I really think the whole thing was the framers never imagined. That's why there's nothing in the Constitution regarding this, but they never imagined anybody would ever want to be a citizen of the federal government. So they didn't put any protections in for that. And once that happened, once you became a citizen of the federal government, and all of us became citizens of the federal government, it just became part of the national consciousness where that's just normal, like driving on the right side of the road. You just get in your car and you drive on the right side of the road. Well, you go and somebody asks you for $20, you hand them a Federal Reserve note, not something from what the government created. And so the understanding of where we're at today, where only those Federal Reserve notes are in play, is an incredibly dangerous position. It puts the bankers in total control. And, you know, if they were to call the debt due for the country, there's no money in the money supply system if you pay off the debt. There's so many things about the way money works today that people, you probably can sense that there's something wrong, but you can't put your finger on it. Ed Brotherton's the guy to help you put your finger on exactly what's wrong with money so you know what to do.
Yeah, his movie he's working on is called Inflation Nation, and the website is inflationnationmovie.com. And, you know, he's been on our show a couple times, several times, and he always brings up the definition of dollar. And the Mint Act of 1792, he cites here, dollars or units, each to be of the value of a Spanish mill dollar as the same as now current, and it contained 371 grains and 4/16 parts of a grain of pure or 416 grains of standard silver. So a metric seemed to have been created.
Yes. We know exactly what a dollar is, yet 99.9% of Americans don't know what a dollar is. A dollar is not a gold coin. That's not a dollar. You can get $10 worth of gold in a coin form, but it's not a dollar coin. That's not a $10. It's not what's according to the Constitution. According to the Mint Act of 1792, it is silver. A silver dollar with a specific number of grains of silver is what a dollar is. And that is the money that the framers intended for the government to use at the state level. That way they couldn't just print up whatever they wanted and steal the economic resources of your children and your grandchildren, which we are the children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren of the people who were snookered by this Federal Reserve system that we have.
Snookered right out of Jekyll Island.
Yes.
Well, Inflation Nation, it's a movie production by Ed Brotherton, and he's got a whole thing there. He's got a crew section.
Under crew, you learn more about Ed. You can learn about the film composer that he has for it. This is, you know, Ed's got the contacts in the industry to put on the real show. He can do the real equipment. I've seen his budget, how he puts it together. This isn't like me putting on a YouTube video.
I applaud his documentation of his fundraising efforts here, and I encourage everybody to support it because I know Ed wants to get to the truth. And Ed will be somebody who will use the resources allocated to this effort to bring truth to light. And he should be supported. Go to inflationnationmovie.com and donate, because phase one is $150,000. Let's get that off the ground. Let's get this going. Check it out. Check out Ed Brotherton's deal, Inflation Nation. So, Corey.
Now, I had a clip, Todd, for something, and I don't know what happened to it. I know I told you the other day I had it, but I'll find another one for next week's show. This was our good friend from here from California, who's now in Congress, and Alan Lowenthal. That's who I'm referring to.
Okay.
Alan Lowenthal, when he was in government here in California, he tried to remove the warning that the legislators put in a long, long time ago that communists will try and get into government, and then they'll try and destroy the government from within. And Alan Lowenthal was, you know, one of the California legislators that tried to get that removed. He's having a big meeting. He's inviting people from communist countries to come here to LA. And, you know, he's very involved with communist countries. But he was also the guy who co-sponsored this ridiculous bill on the climate. And it was just amazing. So I will do my best to try and get that for next week's show, because I'm so bummed I didn't have it ready.
What would be a communist country that he's in endorsing?
Well, Vietnam. Let me pull up a few of them who's coming here. Let's see. It was Vietnam. Let me get to the news part for here.
Alan Lowenthal.
He's having a town hall meeting, and it would be, he's having some people from Vietnam.
Okay.
In this case.
Well, we've talked about him before, and not in detail. I do recall the name.
Yeah, his wife was running for mayor of Long Beach, and they used in the website, they used the skyline of San Diego. Like, they didn't even know what the skyline of Long Beach looks like. These people are completely disconnected. It's just amazing when you listen to what they say that anybody believes it.
And what's Lowenthal been saying that should not be believed?
Well, you know, right now he's big on climate. And every single one of the solutions that he comes up with is that if you breathe or you do anything that has anything to do with carbon, then you need to pay the federal government the social cost of carbon use. And the federal government will determine what that cost is. It's a new fee.
Yeah, this guy, oh man. All right, let's see what we got here.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, a new global record was set last week, but this is not a good record. The atmospheric concentration of carbon dioxide surpassed 400 parts per million for an entire month. This is the first time we've reached these levels in over 800,000 years. This is a serious and a potent reminder that we have not yet acted on climate change. The last time CO2 concentrations were this high, the world was a hotter place. There were forests in the Arctic, and sea level were meters higher than they are today.
Meters.
Our planet is telling us that climate change is happening. We owe it to our constituents to put aside partisan differences and to begin to work on solutions to this global problem. Thank you, and I yield back.
Let's begin to work on solutions, Corey.
Well, you know the part that he says that there used to be trees and things in the Arctic, which he's right. I mean, there's amazing stuff that's locked up in ice there that you can see. It was obviously a warmer climate. Apparently, that was not good for the environment. And that what we need to do is cover all that up with ice. That's good for the environment. These guys are out of their mind. And it has nothing to do with protecting the environment. They don't care about protecting in the environment. I'm working on right now some research on nuclear reactors. Have you ever heard of a molten salt reactor?
No.
Yeah, exactly. GE buried it because there's no fuel for it. GE being one of the biggest providers of nuclear fuel, they also would... They're the ones that have created these, massive quantities of highly radioactive, very dangerous, spent fuel systems that are stored all over the planet. In my research, I found there's this thing called a molten salt reactor. It runs at very high temperatures but low pressure, which is much more efficient than what we have today, which run at very low temperature, relatively speaking, and very high pressure. So when something goes wrong, they explode. But a molten salt reactor creates a tiny fraction of the spent nuclear fuel that our nuclear reactors today produce. And these things are all over the place, and GE, being one of the largest suppliers of nuclear fuel to these things, they didn't want anybody creating molten salt reactors. You don't have to buy fuel from anybody. It's salt. And it operates at a low pressure. If something goes wrong, it's okay. It's just a little tiny leak. It's not like really dangerous, highly radioactive steam that'll be coming out and creating hydrogen that'll explode like what happened in Japan. And this technology was absolutely buried in favor of something that is very destructive to the environment. Meanwhile, you can find over and over again General Electric and all its subsidiaries, they're really in on this. They think it's a great idea for people like Lowenthal to tell us that, you're breathing. You're exhaling carbon dioxide. You need to pay the social cost of carbon for your breathing.
You breathe, you shall pay.
That's where it is. These guys frustrate me just a little bit. I don't know if you've noticed, but
I'm appreciative of the analysis, and this is why I'm going to harken back to the metaphor of crucible. California is a motherfucking crucible, man.
It is out of control.
It is out of control there, on so many levels. You guys get to go through so many like hardcore psyches of information and it's a desert that turned into oasis with water. I mean, it could go into all that. And it's just Hollywood and how it impacts culture and what people are being told, propaganda. I mean, land of fruits and nuts, as what a loved one said to me about California. It is truly the land of fruits and nuts.
It is very true. And most of them are in office.
Yeah, that's the downside.
But the thing is, there's something really psychologically wrong with most of the people in government. They will look you straight in the face and say things that are absolutely insane, and they believe it. It's
like what?
Nuts.
I believe you, Corey, but that's a strong allegation. Like what? What would somebody say that's insane that they believe?
Well, there's an effort right now to remove one of the water reservoirs that feeds a lot of people in San Francisco.
Okay.
And these people will say that, oh, well, you can just move the reservoir outside of the park that it's in. It's in either a state or national park. I can't recall which area it's in. But they'll put in their argument saying, well, we can just move it because what's happening is this reservoir is destroying the environment in this park. But they already know that, I mean, one, everybody's got to know that there is a drought. You know, that I think is a given. But there's no other place to put the reservoir legally. even if you found a location that would work to put a reservoir, there is no legal location downstream of this reservoir that you can put anything in. They're just coming in to take the water out. It's happening all over.
Hmm.
And the slightest little thing that people say, oh, well, yeah, we can do that. I called. You know how we found that the Silver Lake Reservoir, they're claiming that that water is going to go to the headlands.
Right.
I've called. And I'm trying to get somebody on the hook to say, yes, that water is not going to be dumped in the ocean.
Right.
Now, there's nobody, there's not one person yet who's willing to say, oh, yeah, I'll say that.
This is why this show has more, actual gumption than anything. There's really good podcasts out there, much better podcasts than this one. But I would propose to anybody listening to this doesn't even remotely approach to making the effort to hold anybody accountable that Corey does. Anywhere. And we try. I did curtail my allegation, Corey, last show, saying, hey, we don't want to, allege that this water is going to be dumped in the ocean. If news accounts should be believed, if they're to be believed, it's going to go into their headwaters piped system. And I alleged how much more safer is the pipe system than the open air system? Who cares?
Yeah. Well, here's the rub on that whole thing of being able to transport the water, because it doesn't make sense to me. They're saying that they need to drain that reservoir in order to put a pipe underneath it. That pipe is what would link to the Headlands Reservoir or the Headlands Waterworks that they're
system.
Talking about.
The Headlands Waterworks system, Corey.
Yeah.
It's a system.
I'm still trying to get details on exactly how much water that thing will hold. You know what? I don't trust this government at all. They're draining billions of gallons of water. They're destroying agriculture at a phenomenal rate.
Should we trust what we're told by the regular media at all.
Yeah.
Just because exactly. I saw some statement about it doesn't mean, in LA Times that it's gospel. Nor should you. Where you live.
Well, there is.
Where do you live? What are you looking at, listener?
Yeah. And there's no other pipeline system. So what they're saying is they have to drain the water to put the pipes in so they can move the water back to the headland system. So where does the water go while they drain it all out so they can move it back? They're not. They're going to drain it to the ocean. It just, the pipeline doesn't work that way.
Where's the California progressives, the Greenpeace people, I can say this because I've hung out with a lot of Tea Partiers, okay?
Right.
All right. Where's the other side of the fence with regards to activism? What are they doing?
They're all still stuck in their paradigm, that deeply held belief that, there's no way government would do anything that would cause a famine.
There's no way.
Cause a drought.
There's no way.
Yeah, no way. They just find there's no way a
Democrat
like Jerry Brown would ever do something like that.
Oh.
In fact, we have Greenpeace out here all the time. They're out in front of a mall. And they brought up some of the things that they were working with the governor on. And I asked them straight up, well, do you know about the RICO lawsuit filed against Jerry Brown for poisoning the water? Are you guys doing anything about that? They had no clue.
And did they even show an interest in that might be interesting for Greenpeace to jump on?
No. It was as if I just insulted his mother. Referring that Jerry Brown had been named in a RICO lawsuit.
Oh, because he considers Jerry a badge of his Greenpeaceness.
Yeah, well, Jerry Brown is touted as one of the most environmental governors California has ever had. I mean, he's up in Canada saying how important it is. Jerry Brown is now announcing that just after he announced that he doesn't need voter approval to raise taxes. He also said that he'll be attempting to make binding contracts with other nations that are binding on California. He's just out of control. I'd have no idea the mechanism of how he intends to do that. But his whole goal is he wants to create a binding contract with other nations that will force people in California off the roads, out of their cars, and into $16 a gallon gas, and this whole cap and trade thing, you can see it. They smell getting rich off of carbon, that they're going to be able to tax and fee you in a way for something that, you know, 800,000 years is a blip in how long things have been as far as the overall environment. And there's plenty of studies to say that the carbon dioxide levels got so low that it became dangerous to not even be able to support plant life, that became a factor, that we're in a very low time period of carbon in the overall multi-billion years of geological record. But they're just out of control.
Jerry, you know, he's the...
I hate to even call him Jerry. It just Toilet Brown seems to fit.
Toilet
so much
Brown
better.
Is much better. Much better. I concur.
And I've had plenty of conversations with his office. And let me tell you, they are masters at hiding who they are. There's no way to prove. Well, I shouldn't say no way. I've not been able to prove anybody that works in his office has signed an oath of office or that they are legitimately officers employed by the state of California. They
you have
hide
tried
everything.
You have tried, and I've seen his correspondences, Corey.
Yeah,
you've shared those with me, and you have tried.
Yeah,
yeah. It's weird. It is definitely weird.
Yeah. It's you look back to that 102.7 of the government code saying that communists were trying to get into the country, and get into government, and they're going to hide what they're doing and use force. And Jerry Brown loves to tout that. You know, he's able to use the coercive force of government.
He says coercive out loud.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How about that for a tell on where his head's at? Coercive. Yeah, love it. I'm freaking coercive. Bitches.
Yes. He's said a few times that he likes to use the persuasive power of government before using the coercive power of government. He doesn't say that, hey, let's use the persuasive power of government so I don't have to use a coercive power. He's just using the persuasive power of government to get everybody ready that when he inflicts the coercive power of government, it's just part of the plan.
Okay, we will, Corey, have to get that on audio.
Oh, I'll get you the clip right away.
We have to get that and make that evergreen and play it over and over. Right next to Obama talking about United States and America, the two different places, and how the Second Amendment is upheld in the respective jurisdictions. These are evergreens. Thank you, everybody, for listening to Agenda 31. This is episode 39. This is Todd McGreevy and Corey Ibe on July 10th, 2015. And we will look for you on the No Agenda stream at noagendastream.com Sunday after the 11 o'clock a.m. Central show of No Agenda. You should hear this broadcast. And we look forward to getting your feedback at agenda31.org, info@agenda31.org. Corey, thank you, sir.
Good times. Thank you, Todd.
We're not policing the world.
Take a little trip. Take a little trip. Take a little trip. See. Take a little trip. Take a little trip. Take a little trip. With me. No sugar. Take two.
We're not policing the world. We're not policing the world. We're not policing the world. No, we don't have a military-industrial complex.
Because you can't have prosperity if you're constantly under the risk of a terrorist attack.
Agenda 31.org.